Welcome to the Teachers Unify podcast. I'm Sarah Lerner. This episode features Khadija Butler, founder and president of the Craig D. Butler Scholarship Foundation. She speaks about the loss of her father to community gun violence, the scholarship foundation she's created in his memory, working to help the students of Philadelphia, and much more. We are joined by Khadija Butler, who is the founder and president of the Craig D. Butler Scholarship Foundation, a Philly native, and I'm going to say overall general badass.
I love it.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I would like to start, before we get into everything about the Scholarship Foundation, I want you to tell me about your dad prior to the tragic shooting in 1999.
Oh, so my dad, I try to explain it as best as I can. He definitely, you know, he was the life of the party. He was the person who really held the glue together with my family. I think that's why we're so close now, how he was such a big proponent in that. Very, very loud. I think it's something in all of our DNA. We're like, all of us are very loud and passionate because of him. Very quick to apologize, very loving. He just, you know, I think I mentioned this even in the blog, like he was very vivacious. Like, you just knew him, you loved him. If you did it and you were a stranger, you wanted to know him.
Talk to me about the events of that day, however much you're comfortable sharing.
It's interesting because, sadly, we didn't find out right away. We didn't find out until a day or so later. Apparently, from what was recollected to us, my father was visiting a friend during 4th of July weekend. He backed his car into one of those, I don't want to call it disposable, but one of those basketball poles. And the child, I'll have to say, at that time, got into an argument with him, you know, I guess being a badass in front of his friends. And he goes into some abandoned building because he was a drug dealer at the age of 14. He goes into this abandoned building, shoots my dad. My dad gets into his car, tries to drive to the ambulance, and passed away that day. So he shot him in his groin, which made two holes. That's it in a nutshell, basically.
Did he make it to the hospital?
So he made it to the hospital, but they labeled it as a dead on arrival. So we don't know if he passed in the car or not. I mean, we did sadly see images of what the car looked like, so I doubt it.
How old was he?
43. And it's eerie because I'm 43. So this year is like a strange, you know, until I turn 44. It's a really, it was the same thing for my sister turning 43. It's an eerie feeling.
I'm 43. So clearly you and I are the same age. And I can't even imagine at 19 losing a parent, not just losing a parent, but losing a parent in such a tragic way. And I'm so sorry for what you and your family have had to go through. Was there a trial? Like, was there justice at all?
Yeah, so there was, I guess it was considered a hung jury. They didn't catch him until, so it happened in July. They didn't catch him until August. He decided to have a hung jury. I think those are the moments that I still remember to this day. Just the expression on his face. His mother was there, but his father wasn't. Apparently his father was a police officer, strangely enough. His brother was in jail for the same thing. So it's one of those things you just don't forget. So yeah, that whole hung jury process, that's what it was.
How did losing your dad to gun violence impact you and your immediate family, your extended family? Clearly, he was, as you said, vivacious and well-loved. So how did this impact everyone who had been connected to your dad?
I think we were so shocked, especially for me. I think I didn't really take it. Like, I was in disbelief for really long. So for us, it was like, again, just as I expressed who he was and this personality, the fact that he's like apologizing to this child and kind of saying, here, I'll pay for whatever the damages are. There was just like a state of shock. Like, what was it that was so senseless, or like, why was it that deep for that to even happen?
How do you approach the topic of gun reform and gun violence, not only as someone who lost a parent in that way, but also as a person of color who grew up in a community of color?
Oh, you know, that part is really tough. I mean, because every single day, I think for me, it's the frustration. Like, it's the frustration that in our community, it's this sense of, or this cloud of hopelessness that's around us, because it's the first thing that we see as soon as we wake up. And I think that's been the biggest reason why I actually created the foundation, not just for his memory, but to really redirect the youth's focus. Like, if they're constantly seeing gun violence, you know, on television or someone being shot, and that's all they're seeing, then that's the impact that it's going to have on us, where we're not interested in advancing our career, even thinking we can come out of that type of community.
So this kind of segues into my next question. Can you explain what the Craig D. Butler Scholarship Foundation is, and what makes it unique, and why was it important for you to create this for the students of Philadelphia?
Yeah, so the Craig D. Butler Scholarship Foundation, we provide two $1,000 scholarships to African American high school students. It just at one point used to be four Philadelphia students, but we did expand to the full state of Pennsylvania this year. What makes this difference is we're providing these scholarships in the aftermath of gun violence. So the special thing about some of the scholars that we get, so out of the seven that we have thus far, four of them have experienced some sense of gun violence, meaning they've seen it, they've experienced it, they've had a family member or a student in class that has experienced that as well. And it's not just that it's unique in that perspective, but the other focus is we're saying there are other avenues for you to utilize and provide you a level of hope, especially being a woman of color. I am the mission. And so you seeing it gives you that sense of hope that you do not have to stay stuck in this environment if it's something that you choose.
What are, outside of now being a Pennsylvania resident and having some connection to gun violence, what else are the requirements to get the scholarship, and or are there things that they have to do to, I guess, kind of prove how they've used it? Like, are there like stipulations that they have to pursue public policy or something connected in some way to gun violence?
The only thing that we reinforce in regards to gun violence is them pretty much expressing that in their essay, or if in their recommendation letter, there's, you know, a teacher or a youth advocate that may have expressed how they have been impacted in some way. We also have a section on the application packet that asks a specific question, sort of, you know, what's been the impact that it's had on you, especially living in this community. In addition to those policies, the other eligibility requirements are looking for those that have over 3.0. If you have volunteered or done part-time work, if you work as well as fine AP courses, like we're really looking for, I don't want to say a needle in a haystack, but to kind of let people know we have 4.0 students. They just don't have the economic circumstances to be able to pursue college. So it's really about really shining a light on those that are stellar students as opposed to just those that just want to go to college.
I love that you're doing this. Outside of being a survivor myself, I am a high school teacher and I teach seniors. And this year I have a senior. We as a family, but then by extension, me and my students, we are going through this college process, but I do this every year. And, you know, clearly my students in Florida would not qualify for your scholarship, but I tell them you need to do the research because there are scholarships out there that people may not know about that are very like niche and specific. And I love that you've taken the pain of losing your dad and turned it into a purpose And, you know, you said you are the mission. And clearly, you know, I was doing some research before this episode and saw that something unique about your scholarship is that it is completely Black owned, Black run. And I think that's an important thing as well, to empower those within your community to see these examples of giving back and kind of looking out for each other, if that makes sense.
I totally agree. I think that's the one thing that, when we think about our mission in general, it's the students need to be affirmed that their potential is boundless. That's the biggest thing, is really being able to see that. And I mean, not to mention, you know, I've experienced it personally, so I know what it's like sometimes to just say that I'm going to give up. But at the same time, it wasn't just my father, but my mother too. Both my parents were very big on education and the opportunity that it brings. So it's really just about shining a light on that, and to say, because I think what happens is that it's not that the students don't see those of other races and think that they can't do it. But I will say, like, that's one of the biggest things, because we follow our students as part of our outcomes. And some of the biggest things that they say is just, I genuinely just don't think I can win. I don't think that I'm going to be able to get out there, even though they know there's scholarships. There's such a, as you said, importance in being able to see it, because that's the only way you'll know that you can do it.
I'm going through this now with my own son as we're trying to figure out not only where is he going to college, but where is this money coming from? Because I'm a teacher, so we need all the help we can get.
Yes.
The struggle is real. As we talked about off air, I am from New York, which anyone listening can hear it in my voice. And I love Philly, and I have been there a gajillion times. But I know that gun violence continues to be an issue. So how have you and or the foundation worked to speak out and get involved and help to fix the problem?
In addition to the inaugural scholarship program, we also attend anti-violence resource events. We attend the MLK event. That's the biggest event in Philadelphia in January. And then some of the high schools have these resource fairs where it's that whole, we're kind of doing our part as far as the prevention strategy piece, as to say, instead of you being out there, it's one less person that we're worried about, or I'm worried about seeing. So they'll have these resource fairs for the kids to just make sure that they're keeping them engaged and that they don't have that idle time where they're sitting around thinking about something senseless.
Kind of connecting to that, as we know, school shootings are such a small piece of gun violence. They get the most news coverage, which they shouldn't, but communities of color are disproportionately impacted by gun violence. How has this issue been tackled by the foundation? And are there other community efforts to keep Philly and the surrounding neighborhoods safe?
I'm not sure if you heard, but I know it made national news with those students that it wasn't the shooting in Northeast High School, but it was those surrounding areas. I recall, like, 2 years ago, I wrote this op-ed just saying the importance of investing in Black and brown youth in the community because of this same thing that continues to happen. And when we don't invest in them, this is what we see, and this is what we continue to see. So it's not just the op-ed as far as the awareness and visibility of our scholarship, but we're also a part of the mayor's office has something called a mapping resource, where for those Black and brown students, they have an opportunity to be able to see the things to redirect them from gun violence. Like, they have a lot of gun violence prevention programs. And I partner with a few organizations that are big proponents and advocates as well.
In connecting with the youth through outreach and the different programs that you and the Scholarship Foundation are involved with, how do you find that the students, either in Philly proper or, you know, in the outskirts, how do you find that they are processing this pervasive issue of gun violence?
I mean, it's sad because even in talking to scholars, you know, their thing is always about, I don't want to say like they're looking at it as, wow, that could have been me, but that's how they're processing it. Like, it's happening so often where it's like, wow, had I not come to school a little bit earlier, or had I not been in, I don't know, like, we have a lot of student athletes, had I not been at football practice that day, it's something that happens in the back of their mind. So it's almost like they're looking for something to be able to say, I need to be able to get out of it. And then I think the other thing that I think I focus on the most in one of my books is, as much as we talk about the gun violence victims, like the fatalities, we don't think about those that are dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and depression and not being able to sleep, including myself, like, you know, being that victim as well. Like, these are the things that they're experiencing. So it's really getting them out of that form of anxiety and saying, I have to find a way out in order for me to excel.
That's a really important point you brought up, because within the conversation of gun violence, the focus is on the victims, as it should be. However, there are the survivors, there are the families and people on the periphery who are suffering. I have PTSD and I have anxiety and I have all of these things. And I know that this is a huge issue within the gun violence community, because we as the survivors far outnumber the tens of thousands of victims, which in and of itself is awful. You know, I think that is an incredible point that you bring up. These kids, and, you know, I saw it at my own school when we had our shooting. There were kids who, you know, if I hadn't stayed home from school that day, or if I hadn't left class to go see another teacher, or whatever the case was, you know, it's survivor's guilt. It's all of that. And these are things that aren't necessarily talked about or thought about. You know, and I know, you know, Abby Clements. And one of the reasons that she, Sari Beth, and I started our organization is because the teacher voice was a huge piece that was missing in the gun violence conversation. Because those kids who are experiencing gun violence at home, in the community, on the walk to and from school, or even at school, we as the teachers are the ones who care for them and nurture them and listen to them and all of that. We felt that that voice, along with the survivor family voice, was a critical piece that was missing from the conversation, which brings me to my question. What are your thoughts on lockdown drills and active shooter drills?
I mean, even thinking about it, I'm not going to lie, it really just, it puts a pit in my stomach that that now has to be a part of your process. I mean, I will definitely say, especially thinking of the kids, I haven't had any of the scholars experience that yet, thank God. But, you know, some of the things they do kind of talk about, as you said before, is the impact that they had with the specific teacher. Like, as you said before, the fact that you started this organization and there wasn't a voice, except when you're on the news, to talk about it. You know, sometimes, like with some of these kids, their teachers or their guidance counselors are like a second parent. So they're experiencing that level of grief all over again. So now the teacher, as a parent, has to now discuss, this is something that I have to now express to my kids in order for them to stay alive. That cannot be an easy thing. And as much as I'm one person and try to, you know, avoid those efforts, like I said, it makes me sick to my stomach, to be honest.
So the students who've applied for the scholarship and or the ones who've received it, they don't have regular lockdown drills?
They have not expressed that to us. And like, unless they want to talk about it, I try not to really encourage, because as I said before, it's really hard. Like, nobody tells you that form of grief or what that feels like. Like, no, even when I think of it myself, I'm like, there should be there isn't a timeline as to when it should end. So sometimes it's really, it's a lot for them. Like, it's a lot for them to experience. And, you know, I'm just happy that they've overcome it. But we have received applicants that said, from what I've seen, a friend of mine got shot. My grades just went down. So now I can't even apply because I'm trying to tackle this one issue. It's hard to have them kind of talk about it and express it. So I'm sure they have them. I'm sure they have, but they have not expressed them in their application. And I try to just provide the resources where they can discuss it.
That's so important because the mental health piece, and I would love to talk to you about your own mental health journey, but for these students specifically, the ones you see as applicants, the ones I see in my classroom, there is such a need for continued mental health care because healing and trauma aren't linear. And I have had to explain that to way too many adults who seem to think, okay, well, the shooting at my school was 6 years ago. I should just get over it and move on. Okay, there is no getting over it and moving on. You lost your dad in 1999. There is no getting over that and moving on. And I think that people don't want to understand that, again, healing and trauma aren't linear. And what trauma looks like for you is different than what trauma looks like for me, is different than even what trauma looks like for someone at my school who experienced the same thing I did, or someone else who experiences the loss of a parent in community gun violence. And I think it's important that you provide those resources to the kids, because I also believe that there has been a real stigma around mental health in communities of color. Like, you just need to tough it out and deal with it and keep it moving, but you can't do that.
No. And it comes out in different ways. And I think you got to remember, at that time, we didn't have a mental health counselor on site because we didn't have that happening at that time. Like, you know, not to the degree that they are now. And then the other piece is, so now what's great about it is we're not enforcing it, but we're making it such a regular piece to be able to have the kids go. I didn't have that. Like, even when my dad passed, there are a lot of free resources out there for victims of gun violence and things like that, but no one forced me to go. So I didn't really deal with it at that time, as opposed to it being emotional and mental well-being being such a big thing right now in our community, and especially in Philadelphia, with it being this crisis. It's such a, you know, we have such a focus on it right now, but at that point we hadn't. And it's the same thing even when it comes to the scholarships. Like, despite it being something that's free, you can't force them to apply, just same way with the mental health. You can't force them to do it. You just hope that they do.
I think if anything positive can come out of a tragedy like this, it is the realization, acceptance, openness to getting mental health care. And I remember when we got back to school, because school was closed for 2 weeks after the shooting, so many of my students told me they couldn't stay to work on the yearbook because we had to finish that book. You know, learner, I can't stay today. I have therapy. Like, that was never a conversation we would have had. It would always have been, I have an appointment, or I have somewhere to be. But the openness of saying, I have therapy, and I'm just looking at them like trying not to get teary eyed, like, please go, because I have it tomorrow. Like, go.
Yes.
And it wasn't just the girls. It wasn't just the white students. It was everybody saying it. And that was profound to me, because boys are taught to stifle their emotions. Communities of color are taught, like, we don't talk about these things, just deal with it. And it meant so much to me that all of the students were open to it, whether it was a free resource at school, or, you know, something out in the community through their health insurance. That is a positive that I have seen, at least in the 6 years since the shooting at my school. How do you see, and I know we touched on it a little, but how do you see educators and young people collaborating on issues of gun violence? Because you said that there are students who talk about the teachers who've had a meaningful impact on their lives, but where there's this intersection of students and teachers, where do you see this common ground and this collaboration?
I find that it's with, so one of the partners that I have is the 100 Black Men in Philadelphia, and they're already connected to one of the high schools, Valves High School. So really it's about them having that level of comfort. I feel like not just comfort, but really seeing, and it's not just African-American youth advocates, but them just having a level of vulnerability, them knowing like, hey, we are here for you. So I think that's one piece of it. But the other piece is I actually partner with Ben Franklin High School, and there's a social worker who connects me to the teachers and the students that are having a tough time. Maybe, you know, one of the women don't have access to pads, and, you know, just thinking of those kind of things. So it's about providing them that comfort and saying, hey, so I know you came to me to get your clothes washed today, but I also want to introduce you to X, Y, and Z. Like, and really, when you see those youth advocates or social workers that can see the potential in some of those students and they have, you know, that level of rapport, that's how you can introduce those different things like mental health or like their futures. And so I think that's what's so important about them being able to bridge the gaps between community founders like me and the teachers.
And I think it's important to note, even though our organization is called Teachers Unified to End Gun Violence, we are also representing both current and retired teachers, administrators, school-based employees. You know, when people think of school and students, it's the teacher-student relationship, but there are those guidance counselors and social workers and other advocates at school along with the teachers. What do you think that school-based employees and educators in general can do to use their voices in times of tragedy, like a school shooting or community gun violence?
I think platforms like these are really important. I think when we do have these different vendor and resource fairs, I want to be able to connect to some of them, because sometimes the biggest thing I ask for, not only when I'm at those events, but I also provide scholarship workshops to like parents of low-income students, those that just don't have any awareness. And the one thing that I say when I'm talking to the teachers is, where can I be of service? Because there's a lot of things in the 4 years that I didn't know, like what the teachers are experiencing, or like the biggest thing now is just being able to connect to the kids. Because to us, like, we're old. Like, it's like they do not connect to me. So most of the time, like, I have to kind of get the attention of the teachers and, like, you know, bring me in as to where you think that I see fit. So I think even if the teachers are, that's why I try my best to really be visible and like to allow the teachers to call, ask me questions. Like if there's, you know, even the social worker, she said, hey, would you mind like mentoring one of our students who wants to like start a business? Like wherever I can be of service, you know, just having that bridge and that conduit is really important.
And as teachers, we are always looking for resources and kinds of things to not only make impact for our students, but also to make our lives easier. Like, we don't know everything. We like to pretend that we do, but the reality is that we don't. Is there anything else that you want to share that maybe I didn't cover?
I mean, I just want to continue to encourage our students to continue to find ways through you as the teacher, not just through education, but just through resources of getting through what that feels like, what that trauma feels like. I, just speaking personally for myself, I did not, and I say this all the time, I don't think I properly grieved my father at that time, because I just was in such shock that it started to catapult in different ways. And that's the thing I don't want to happen to the kids. Like, I want them to be able to address it and heal from it, because then, you know, you can walk around with this sense of, as you said, survivor's guilt or pain. And I just want them to find other areas and to let them know that there is hope for them.
Have you finally processed and grieved?
I have. So it's interesting. I feel like the grieving started over, like the clock started when I started the foundation. And then when I wrote my book, it would be moments. I remember going to this community fair and like, I don't, as I'm talking about my dad, I'm like looking out at the community and I just burst out crying. Like I didn't even know why. I'm like, I'm not a person who really gets stage fright. So I'm like, why am I? And I've had to go to my therapist and just kind of ask, like, what is the reasons why this continues to happen? And, you know, his response is more so when you're thinking about him and you're thinking about the impact that you know that you want to have, it's that passion. Like, it was almost like my dad was inside of me at that point. Like, it really felt like that. And it's like between that and when I was writing the book and I was writing these different things, it was really coming to that healing place of like, I'm not going to see him again, but he is going to live on within my foundation.
We only met about 45 minutes ago before we started recording, and I clearly did not know your dad. But if you are even a fraction of the man that you say he was, you are doing the Lord's work and you are out there changing lives. And that is outstanding. And turning pain into purpose is a really meaningful and profound thing. And you are changing the lives of students who have unfortunately been impacted by gun violence. And that's important because these kids need it.
Yes, it's not easy. I try to tell people that all the time. It's a thankless job. I don't make a ton of money at all. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, we're just starting to, you know, get some help and donations and things like that. You know, this is clearly a passion project, clearly I see the benefit. I just want to do my part in the city. Like, I'm tired of this whole, oh, bad things happen in Philadelphia, right? Like, I'm tired of hearing that because I know that that's not true. And I just want to continue to highlight those students that are just, you know, really making a difference.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to follow Teachers Unify to End Gun Violence on Instagram and Threads at Teachers Unify, and follow the podcast on both platforms at Teachers Unify PC.